From the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Veterans Radio. And now, here's your host, Dale Thronberry.
And good morning, America, and welcome to Veterans Radio. It's a pleasure and an honor to be talking with you this morning. I've got a great program lined up for you, and I'm hoping that you'll stay tuned because there's a lot of good things happening. Our first guest in just a couple of minutes will be David Finkel. He has written a new book entitled Thank You for Your Service. He wrote a book called The Good Soldiers a couple of years ago, which I found was extremely powerful. It's about the unit. It's the 2nd of the 16th, I believe, battalion that was in Iraq during the surge, and he followed them for 8 months out of the 15 months that they were there and wrote the book, The Good Soldiers, which we'll talk about again in a little bit. And now he's followed up with a book entitled Thank You for Your Service, which follows these men and their families after they got home from Iraq. And I have to tell you, this is one of the most powerful stories I've read. In fact, both of his books are really gut-wrenching, and you know, I'm hoping that all of you can get out there and read these things. This is what we need to talk to people about, what we need to talk to our congressmen about, making sure that the services are available to our veterans and their families. And speaking of that, later on in the program, we're going to have a representative, Lori Percio, who is the Assistant Director of Claims for Veterans and Rehabilitation for the American Legion National Headquarters, and she will be on, as they say on Car Talk, in the third half of the program. To tell us what's going on with this shutdown in Washington and how it is going to or how it is affecting veterans and their services and checks and so on and so forth. So I'm really excited about that, and I'm hoping that you can get in on the conversation with her later on in the program, and reminding you that our number here is 877-573-7825. So write that down, 877-573-7825. I also wanted to thank everybody who that I met last weekend back in New Jersey. I went to my 50th high school reunion, and I know that's not a big deal to some people, but most of us, when we saw each other last week, we looked at it and looked at each other and said, wow, you're still alive. And I found that to be rather humorous. And also I found out that some other people in my class had been veterans and had gone, you know, had been in, you know, with our war, Vietnam at the time, and that many of them had difficulties themselves working through the VA claim system. You know, we always talk positively about the VA health system, especially here locally in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and around the country. There are some great facilities out there, and they really do the best that they can. But we, you know, there always seems to be issues with the VA claim system. And now I see with this shutdown that now they're going to, you know, that's slowed down the process. When we talk with Lori Percio later on in the program, we'll find out about that, because if you were watching the news, we kept getting these kind of conflicting things where Congress seems to, I don't know, they keep stepping on themselves to get out of the way sometimes, you know, that they wanted to pass these piecemeal additions to the budget or to reinstate, you know, opening up the memorials or doing this or doing that, but they can't seem to sit down and do what is best for the country and best for their veterans, because, you know, they asked us, and especially this latest generation, they asked this generation to go off and fight for 10 years, and they've done a really good job, and they've done the best that they can, and now they're coming home and they're finding that some things are a little bit delayed. And this is what we're going to be talking about when we talk with David Finkel in his book, Thank You for Your Service. There are many events going across the country, of course, and we'd like you to check your local veterans organizations or check your local papers to see what's up with the veteran services that are going on. We've got Veterans Day coming up in the middle of November. And I also want to remind you, Veterans Radio is going to be celebrating its 10th anniversary. I can't believe we have 10 years. Bob is not here. Bob is off sailing. That ought to be interesting. I'd like to see that. As soon as he told me he was going sailing today with somebody, I pictured the movie What About Bob. I don't know if you remember when Bill Murray was tied to the mast of the sailboat, and I'm sure Bob is a better sailor than that. But anyway, he wanted me to make sure to let you know that we are going to be doing a special 10th anniversary program. I believe it's on the program is going to be on November 16th. And we want to make sure that you can participate. So if you have a favorite program that you have heard in the last 10 years or you want to just get in on the action, just send us out an email to either Bob or Dale at veteransradio.net. Or because we are so technologically sophisticated here at Veterans Radio, you can contact us at facebook.com/veteransradio or twitter.com/veteransradio. And I think that will be kind of cool, too. So we're excited to talk to all of you about being on the radio for 10 years. As Bob always said, you know, we have a microphone. For some reason, somebody has allowed us to voice our opinions and tell you these stories of veterans and their families. And, you know, we have been very fortunate and just amazed at being able to talk to some of these people that we have been able to over the last 10 years, from veterans to their families, to people from the VA, to Medal of Honor recipients, to men and women who have served and their stories. And this is what one of the things that we do here at Veterans Radio, and what we encourage all of you out there, especially if you are a veteran, get your story down. Either get it written down or participate in the Veterans History Project. Record your stories because, you know, once you're gone and if you didn't tell anybody what you did, how are they going to know what Grandpa did or Grandma did? There was a woman here in Ann Arbor that passed away recently, and she had been a nurse during World War II. She was 100 years old, and her stories were fascinating. In fact, she was one of our very first guests on Veterans Radio. I believe her name was Margaret McGregor, and it was just a fascinating story. And these people are unfortunately passing away at a very rapid pace, so we got to make sure we get those down. I don't know about any of you out there, but if you're talking to your older relatives or trying to find out what Dad did during World War II or Vietnam or whatever the conflict happened to be, it's important that you get these stories. And I think that we want to make sure that you talk to them and get them written down. It's fascinating sometimes when you go back and find out, you know, throughout the history of this country, how many generations of your relatives have been involved with the military. And we are awaiting. Is David there?
Here.
Okay. Right now, we've got David Finkel on the line. And David, I want to welcome you back to Veterans Radio. And I guess I better give the official preface here for the program. David was on our program on the 3rd of December 2011, where we talked about the good soldiers. And I had written something, and I just want to read back what I wrote at that time, because it just... I thought that book was powerful, David, and I said, "The Good Soldier is the most powerful story I have read about the war in Iraq. This is just one of many stories we did not see on television. You can feel the fears and heat and smell the odors of war and all its ugliness. This is a must-read for those of you who really want to know what war is like and what was going on at the time." And now you've come back with another one. David, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Well, thanks very much. I'm glad to be here again.
And you are also local, well, relatively local. You're going to be in Traverse City on Monday?
I will, yes. I'm looking forward to that as part of the writer series. I get to spend a day in a place that sounds pretty idyllic to me.
I think you're going to really like it up there. And you're there at the peak of the color, as they call it here in Michigan.
Terrific, because I'm here in Washington. It's been just raining like crazy for 4 or 5 days. It'll be nice to take a break from that.
It will be. Of course, you never know. We might get some snow up there. So David, is a Pulitzer Prize-winning author. He's also the winner of the MacArthur Genius Award, which means he's very smart, and which gives you a couple of shekels where you can spend some time probably writing more books or doing more research. Is that true?
Well, we'll see. I mean, this new book, Thank You for Your Service, it just came out a week or so ago. And my concern right now is just trying to get the story of these mentally wounded vets and their families out to as many people as possible. It's the first book you were describing, it was a book about men at war. And this is a book about families in the after war. It's not a romantic story by any means. The book is not a policy book. It's not a numbers book. It's stories of people who tried hard during the Iraq War because of what they saw or what they did, what they encountered. They came home significantly changed. And I'm sure as many of your listeners know, the road back to some sense of normalcy is a long one. And these people are in the midst of it. And so I'm just trying to get people to pay attention to what they're going through.
I think it's such a valuable story to tell. And I was going to ask you just kind of, you mentioned it just briefly, you know, that you were with these men in your first book, The Good Soldiers, for 8 months out of their 15-month tour.
Yeah, they ended up having the deployment was 15 months. They were probably on the ground in a lousy neighborhood in southeast Baghdad for about 14 months. And this was in 2007, 2008. They were one of the surge battalions that went over. And, you know, if you think back to that moment in the war, there had been so many efforts underway, different versions of the war. And by the time 2007 rolled around, there were a lot of people saying the thing was lost, the tragic moment was ahead, and into that moment went this infantry battalion out of Fort Riley, Kansas. Young guys, mostly, 19, 20 years old, many of them, not all, but many of them, their first deployment. And they went over with a young, naive soldier's sense of mission and invincibility. And then what happened is what always happens in war. Things changed, things shifted, attitudes changed, people became degraded by what they were seeing or what they were doing. Mm-hmm. And again, when they came home, they were forever changed, and now they're involved in the next phase of their lives.
Well, I want to remind our audience, we're talking with David Finkel here on Veterans Radio, and if you have a question for him, you can give us a call at 877-573-7825. 877-573-7825. So we're working with this battalion of young men in 2007, 2008, as you mentioned, and then they went through a very difficult time, and you know, many, it seems like many of their compatriots and comrades were injured, and many were killed, of course. And now they've got to come home. And some of them came straight home. Some of them redeployed again?
Yeah, sure. I mean, some stayed in, some got out, some went to Afghanistan, some went to other places. You know, it's worth, let me emphasize one thing up top. Just even though the book is not heavy on numbers, there are a few numbers that I think are worth pointing out, and those are, here are the numbers. Since 9/11, about 2.5 million Americans have joined the various branches of the services. Mm-hmm. Of the 2.5 million, according to the Pentagon, about 2 million of those have deployed directly into Iraq or Afghanistan. And of those 2 million, the best estimates are that about 1.5 million have come home okay. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, better for the experience of having been in the military, even in some tough places. But that leaves about 20 to 30%, or about 500,000 of those who served or are serving, coming home with varying degrees of psychological damage, psychological injury. And those are the ones this book focuses on. This is not a book about the ones who are doing well. It pays attention, very intimate and sometimes painful attention, to the lives of those who are having a hard time, continue to have a hard time. And it follows them, you know, into their living rooms, into VA hospitals, into various treatment programs, all across the board, is again, as they try to get better.
I was fascinated by this book, and really, it's a very emotional book. I think for the reader, and it's sometimes it gets very difficult to read sometimes, because you are telling the story of these real men and women, especially some of the women, trying to adjust to their soldier who has come home.
Right.
Could you talk about some of the women that you talked to? I don't want to give away the book, obviously.
Well, no, I'm happy to talk about anybody in the book. I think it's a good thing to do. Yes, in the first book, since it was an infantry battalion, it was largely about men, young men, the character of young men in such a moment. But home now, the story is very much about them, but also wives, girlfriends. In one chapter, a mother whose son took his own life. Across the board, these women, as much as anyone, are feeling and suffering the effects of these wars. But they're not just victims. There's some pretty amazing, strong women in this book. In fact, mm-hmm. you know, all the people, even in their weakest moments, what impressed me so much is not just the circumstances of what they're going through, but the fact that that they keep trying. They keep pushing forward, trying to find a way to feel better. I think that's a pretty extraordinary thing.
I was struck by that also. You know, in addition to the men in this particular case who had, you know, suffered some very just incredibly traumatic injuries, not only physically but mentally, of course, you know, trying to do whatever they can to go back to that person they were.
Which, right,
and there's nothing. It's impossible.
Well,
to do
well, look, you know, there's, and your listeners will know this. There's nothing new here. War always has this kind of effect. How could it not? So whatever war you've been in, whatever country you've been in, these are pretty eternal stories. But they're also our current version of an eternal story. So, and I think that makes it especially worth paying attention to. So if you want to get down to the various stripes of people in the book, you know, it ranges from a guy who was regarded as perhaps the finest soldier in the battalion, and this is a guy who was on his third deployment to Iraq. He had been in combat for about 1,000 days, performed well, and then just couldn't help himself, cracked open, and had to come home and left the war with not pride in how he had fought, but shame that he had to leave early. And this is a guy who, to this day, is still feeling a sense of shame. But the pride is coming back, but it's not there yet. It's a long road. So that's one guy.
Right. What part
There's
of that story? I just want to.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
If I'm thinking about the right guy, one of his soldiers, I guess, under his command or in his squad, you know, said that there was a terrible IED type of explosion shortly after he left or while he was gone. And said to him, you know, this never would have happened if you had been here.
Right. And so it was said, yeah. That line was said as a soldier's compliment, you know.
Right, no, I understand
if
that.
If he had been there, he had the sharpest eyes. He always found the bombs. But he heard it differently. He heard it as blame.
Yeah, it's your fault.
As a reproach. And so that interpretation of what was intended as a compliment, it's one of the things people have to deal with.
Right, and we follow him throughout the story, it seems.
Sure. He's the main guy I write about. And it's in many ways the story of the book is the story from his first homecoming with his head hanging as he walked across the tarmac in Kansas to see his wife, to his second homecoming after a mental health treatment program that turned out to be quite successful in his case.
Yeah. There's always hope at the end of that tunnel, as they say. And as long as you keep going down that road, you know, maybe something good will happen. And I know that.
Yeah, I mean, there's no pretending in this book. There's no Hollywood happy ending. It doesn't mean it's a relentlessly sad account. But I also, out of respect for these guys, don't want to pretend for the sake of a reader that that everything wraps up tidily at the end. This is the war itself came to an end. But the after war is something that's going to go on for the rest of their lives. So they understand this now.
Sure. We're going to take a little break right now, David, if you don't mind. Please stay on the line. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We're talking with David Finkel, author of Thank You for Your Service. If you've got a question, give us a call here at 877-573-7825. We'll be right back after this.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
Down the hall till you see the sign in your back where you started at the end of the line. The VA shuffle, VA shuffle.
And we are back on Veterans Radio, and that was Michael J. Martins with the VA Shuffle. And I picked that particular song again. We're talking with David Finkel, the author of his new book, is Thank You for Your Service, because one of the characters in the book at one point has to get 39 signatures or something like that before he can get treatment.
Right. And, right.
And you just follow this poor guy who, you know, he's got traumatic brain injury. He can't remember everything that he wants to any longer, and it's almost like he has to make a list to get from point A to point B.
Well, this is where good intentions collide with absurdity, and this was a pretty amazing soldier. And the background on him, he was in a vehicle. He was in a Humvee. Pardon me. I'm sorry about that, Dale.
Right.
He was in a Humvee, and it ran over some deep buried explosives and was blown sky high. Came down, and this guy, you know, he gets out of the Humvee with a broken leg, and then, even despite the broken leg, turns around, comes back, and helps pull two soldiers out of the Humvee, two wounded soldiers, as it catches on fire. But he can't get to the driver, who burns to death. And what happened after that, when he found out that the driver had died, is he began having nightmares. He didn't tell anyone, but he began having nightmares fairly frequently involving the guy who died. And in the nightmare, the guy was on fire saying to this soldier, "Why didn't you save me?
Yeah, why can't you help me?"
Yeah, so after time, he fell apart, and he had to go through a program. He did it, a VA program, a pretty good program that went on for 7 weeks, came out, and then got accepted into these new units the Army is doing called Warrior Transition Battalions, kind of special attention to help a soldier either transition back to his unit or out of the service into civilian life. Good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Special attention. But on his first day, he was given a list with 39 names on it and told to spend a couple of days going around and meeting all these people, getting their signatures to show that he had met them and he knew where their offices were. Okay, so this is a guy, he would go around, offices were closed for lunch, people were on coffee breaks, people weren't there, people were there, people sent him to other places. And this poor guy who on some days has a hard time just walking from his house to his car spent 3 days trying to get these signatures and feeling, sometimes laughing, but sometimes feeling so stupid that he, not only that he had to do this, but he couldn't do it.
You would think, oh, this is a simple task. But for the civilians out there in the world, this is never a simple task to to find all the people that you need signatures for.
So, again, here we have, I mean, the program is a good idea, good intentions, mm-hmm. and the people working there, almost to a person, at least my experiences with them, pretty good people, but the minute-by-minute sometimes can be pretty grueling and debilitating for a wounded soldier.
They can be. Could you talk just briefly about a couple of the programs that you came up across?
Well, so in the course of the book, three guys eventually go into three different treatment programs, mental health treatment programs. They reach the point where they acknowledge a problem and programs are found for them. But to show the haphazard nature of all this, one guy, the guy I was just describing, ended up in a 7-week program that mixes the Iraq, Afghanistan guys with Vietnam guys. That's his program. Another guy wants to go to that one, but it's a long waiting list at that point. He needs help pretty quickly. So they scramble and find him a program in Colorado, about 6-7 hour drive away. And that program is not 7 weeks. It's 4 weeks. Okay, also a good program, but in one you get 7, and one you get 4. Then there's a third guy who also needs help, and both of those programs I just described are full, so his caseworker looks around and finally finds him a program in California that's entirely donor-supported. Because of that, guys stay a minimum of 4 months. So you have 7 weeks, 4 weeks, and 4 months, and each guy ended up in a program not because it was the best suited program for his difficulties, but simply because they had an opening.
Could you give our audience the names of those programs?
Well, I'll tell you about the one in California. It's called the Pathway Home, and it's a small program, probably a platoon sized. I have to say that it makes sense to me when people say that kind of program couldn't work on a national scale because there's just too much need.
Right,
there are too
right.
many guys looking for help, and to put people in a program for 4, 5, 6 months on a wide scale, it can't happen. But it does happen for a few people, and this is a program that has the luxury of time, and what happens there is a long process of guys kind of steadily tearing their lives apart and trying to understand not who they were in the moment of the traumatic event or the moment after, but who they had been patterned to be before it happened to help them better understand why they reacted the way they think they did and the sense of guilt they might have come home with.
I found that one, I mean, all the programs sounded great to me, and which is why, you know, we're going to be talking more about them in future programs, but in this particular one where they go back and you look at your life, as you mentioned, before the traumatic event, to see how you know, maybe why you reacted a particular way when other people didn't react that way.
Right. Yep. So this guy lucked out. The other two might have done the job for him. I can't talk definitively about what didn't happen, only what did happen. In this case, this guy really benefited from being in that other program. And I think if you talked to him, he would say it saved his life. He had gone through a couple of suicide attempts, and he's not great yet, but, you know, we talk all the time. He's doing pretty well.
I encourage all of our people out there to read this story because it just takes you right into the emotional center of these people. And the one that you're talking about with one of his attempted suicide things was the shotgun under the chin, and
sure.
and arguing and fighting with his wife not to, you know, she doesn't want him to do it, and he's determined to, and of course eventually he doesn't, but.
Right.
I was holding my breath through that whole thing. I didn't want to turn to the next page.
No. I mean, because at the end of the day, if that happened to you, I like to think it's because you care about these people, the stories of what they're going through. It's not just a pity parade or anything like that. It's the real deal going on out there, and these are folks in all their complexities. You know, they're wounded. They're also angry. They're funny some days. They're the whole range of just people across America who have been to war and are trying to get better.
I think what I found interesting, David, was the women in the story, and not just the wives, but some of the caseworkers and other women that, that these men would run into that had similar stories going on at home.
Right. There's one caseworker, in fact, the woman who found the California
right.
home for this one soldier. Her job during the day is to deal with 49 pretty tough cases of severely wounded guys and their fractured families. So that's what she does during the day. And at night, she goes home to her 50th client, I guess is the word, who is her husband, who early in the war was significantly injured. And he in many cases is an example of the resilience the Army likes to talk about, how they're building resilience. And he is a strong guy, but for him as well, for none of these guys is life the simple thing it was beforehand. When you get rattled around down to your soul, you have to make a series of decisions. There's one guy in the book, we're talking about a different guy now, who simply, what he has to do every night before he goes to bed is lay out his clothes, his wallet, his watch, his keys, everything in a place, a predetermined place. So when he wakes up the next morning in the new fog of a new day, he simply follows footsteps to get himself together. He doesn't want to be this way, but he recognizes this is the deal now, and so that's his accommodation to his injury to make sure that he can start each day in a very linear, specific way and get on with the business of being alive.
Right, yeah. Wasn't he the one that put something in the microwave so he wouldn't forget it?
No, that's another guy. That's,
okay,
but it's another
sorry.
Example. Right, right. His wife texting him every 5 minutes, go in the freezer, take out this package, take it out of the package, put it in the microwave, turn the microwave on, turn the microwave off, take it out of the microwave. And again, this is by no means everyone who's fought in these wars, but it is some people. And,
no, but it's so amazing to see these guys trying to do this, and you can feel the amount of energy that it takes and willpower just to get through the day. Because as you mentioned, some of these people are taking many many drugs,
right?
For depression, or to sleep, or to stay awake, or whatever it is, and you know, not placing blame anywhere, but for a while that was all the treatment that they were able to get.
Well, you know, and your subsequent guests may have something to say about this,
right.
but from what I saw, these guys, as they the waiting list for treatment were often long. Just because you want help doesn't mean you get help right away. The system is clearly overwhelmed, and that doesn't mean it's not scrambling to try to find sociologists, therapists, psychologists, psychiatrists, the rest of it to help these guys make the transition. But it's a long wait, and look, one of the things that happened, there have been many reports about this, is guys are just being not only medicated but over-medicated. And in fact, one of the guys I write about in the book, when he went into a treatment program, he was on 43 different pills every morning. There were pills for anxiety. Oh. There were pills for other forms of anxiety to mitigate the pill for anxiety, depression, one pill to get to sleep, another pill to take when he wakes up in the middle of the night and needs to get back to sleep. So imagine that, 43 pills every morning. Seems like a
friend of mine who had a kidney transplant, and you know, all these anti-infection pills that he was taking, it was like that. And one of them, you know, he had so many pills in his little duffel bag that they said, "What are you doing with all of these, you know, these things?" And because it seemed like, you know, doctors would, you know, I don't want to pick on them. That's not fair. It's just amazing. Tell me about these wives, because one of the wives tried to become a caseworker. Well, she ended up being a caseworker herself, and she decided, "Ooh, this is not good."
Well, she needed to work because they were running out of money. And
that's the other thing, and you know, that I want our audience to know: these guys are not getting paid while they're in many cases going through this treatment, and maybe their claims haven't been processed. So,
no, I'm sure you've discussed on your show how long the wait can be before you get your disability rating from the VA, and it can take an awfully long time. And then when the rating comes in, a lot of these guys appeal them because they think they're entitled to more or deserve more. But anyway, a lot of soldiers don't come from the richest parts of the country. They come from economically depressed parts, and they return to a life where there's a continual scramble for money. So this woman, this guy's wife, eventually took a job, and I think she was just, you know, I should know my own book, right? But I think she was applying for a clerical position,
yes,
and they ended up hiring her in a mental health program for civilians as a kind of, not a caseworker, but someone to tend to the daily needs of
right.
Some
she kept going out to these houses of these people to help them with their daily living.
And she tried, and at one point, I mean, it just overwhelmed her, and she walked in one day after work and just dropped her keys off. No note or anything. She just dropped her keys off, her ID badge, and that was that, because, as I say in the book, she had come to the awareness that the one who needed help was her, and so she went about trying to figure out a way to get herself back in good shape because of what her family had become.
Yeah, this is something that I want to talk with her person later on in the program, but, you know, I'm always amazed at these women because when I was in the service, you know, I always knew where I was, and my wife, my mother, you know, other people, they didn't know where I was, and they would be seeing the news and they would hear, you know, this happened or that happened, and at the time we didn't have the instant communication, of course, but the anxiety levels that these women must go through and continue to go through when, you know, the man gets off the airplane and it's just not the same guy.
Right, right. I think in many ways the people who might be best served by the stories in this book are many of the women who are trying to hold it all together, and it's a lonely business, and they're looking for, forgive the expression, a sense of community in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't have anyone else to talk to, I think they will commune pretty well with the stories they're hearing in this book. And I think there's a line in the book about if the truth of war turns out to be you're in it for the guy next to you, the truth of the after war is that you're pretty much on your own. And all these people, at least the ones I met, the ones I'm writing about, the ones I lived with for a couple of years in order to write this book, they are leading some pretty isolated lives. The soldiers themselves don't really want to talk about what they went through and how they're feeling now. The families are pretty isolated and on their own. So, but here's some stories that I think will feel quite common to anyone going through it, and also informative to anyone not going through it.
I think it'll be very helpful because it does help people remind themselves that they're not the only ones that are going through. Each one is individual, of course, and I know that the military and the VA and everything is doing as much as they can to have these groups of people, I guess, just support groups to help people survive, because it seems like in many cases, as you mentioned, even though it's only, you know, it's not this great huge number of, well, 500,000 is a lot, but that are trying to get their lives back together, and we have to make sure that we don't forget about them.
From the civilian side,
we have to remember we cannot forget about these men. Anyway.
And to pay proper attention, not to assume anything.
Right.
I'm not naive enough to think that this book is going to change war policy or anything like that, but I do think there's value in telling stories. The numbers are astonishing. The suicide rate, the number of people who have come back wounded, the years of war, the cost of war, the amount DOD is spending on mental health treatment. The numbers get a little blurry to me sometimes, but underneath the numbers are these day-to-day stories. And you read about these folks, and you'll have a better view of what these numbers actually mean.
David, thank you very, very much for being on Veterans Radio. It's great to talk to you again. I remind our audience to go out there and get both of these books, but most especially, let's take a look at Thank You for Your Service by David Finkel. I know you can find it pretty much everywhere. And also get out there and read the Good Soldiers, because it sets this whole thing up. And I want to thank you for what you've done, and I wish you good luck, and I can't wait to read the next one.
Well, thanks for the time. It's always a good conversation on your show, and I'm so glad to have spent some time with you.
All right. David Finkel, author of Thank You for Your Service. We'll be talking to you again, and we will be right back in a moment. We're going to be talking with Lori Percio of the American Legion. She's I have to read her title here. It's Assistant Director of Claims for Veterans and Rehabilitation for the American Legion National Headquarters. So get near your phone if you have a question for her. We're going to be talking about benefits and what's going on with this shutdown out there. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Specialist Roz McGinnis threw his back against a grenade thrown into his Humvee, saving the lives of his crewmates. Details after this.
It's pouring rain. It's real dark outside. Your heart starts beating really, really fast. You've never done anything so hard in your life. This is boot camp. This is the real thing now. It's such extreme pain, you don't understand how you can finish. I began to feel that there was no way I was ever going to have my title, U.S. Marine. It takes special inner strength, courage, and desire to do this. I was just thinking, I'm so close. I'm so close. And when I finished, I was like, I'm done. I did it. The moment I will never forget is when this drill instructor that I admire so much comes up to me straight in front of me, put her arm on my shoulder and said, good morning, Marine.
PFC Summer Volkman became a United States Marine. Can you? Call 1-800-MARINES. Maybe you could be one of the few and the proud.
On December 4th, 2006, McGinnis was manning the turret in the last Humvee of a six-vehicle patrol in northeast Baghdad, when an insurgent threw a grenade from the roof of a nearby building. As he stood up to get ready to jump out of the vehicle, as he'd been trained to do, officials say McGinnis realized the other four soldiers in the vehicle did not know where the grenade had landed and did not have enough time to escape. He threw his back against the radio mount and smothered the explosive with his body. McGinnis was killed instantly, while the other four men survived. He was awarded the Medal of Honor posthumously by President Bush on June 2nd. 2008. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
For the past 100 years, Amish furniture craftsmen have placed great value upon the beauty and quality of their work, with great attention paid to the details of the wood. Each board is then hand-selected to match the specific furniture in mind and in achieving the desired look of the finished piece. At Naked Furniture of Ann Arbor Showroom, you will find displays of this fine craftsmanship that you can afford and own. Now is the time. You can visit Naked Furniture at 3570 Washtenaw Avenue and experience this fine quality for yourself. The furniture consultants at Naked Furniture of Ann Arbor are there to show you the fine details of Amish furniture. See for yourself the fine quality Amish furniture. Go to Naked Furniture of Ann Arbor, 3570 Washtenaw Avenue, or visit their website, nakedfurnitureofannarbor.com.
Lift, lift, lift right there. Your lift, lift, lift right there. I'm telling you if you don't know.
I'm telling you if you don't know.
Something's coming down the road.
Something's coming down the road.
We call ourselves Last Patrol.
We call ourselves Last Patrol.
We come to bring our brothers home.
We come to bring our brothers home.
Sound of one,
two, that was our good friend Michael J. Martin. Michael, I hope you're doing well. I know you've been sick for a while, and prayers are with you. But for those of you that like music, he's a terrific guy. Just look him up on the web, Michael J. Martin, and music. He does a great job. I also want to remind our audience, you're back here listening to Veterans Radio, that the author that was on the last portion of the program was David Finkel. That's F-I-N-K-E-L. And he is the author of Thank You for Your Service and also The Good Soldiers. And you can find those on Google or probably any other reliable bookstore out there. And joining me on Veterans Radio right now is our next guest, who's going to be talking a little bit about the shutdown with Congress, and I will get into that in a little bit before I lose my temper. And we want you to give us a call here at Veterans Radio. That's 877-573-7825. And joining me on the line right now is Lori Percio. Lori, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you for having me.
All right, let's get your official title, because I know that's probably messed it up. You are the assistant...
No, you did fine.
You are the Assistant Director of Claims for Veterans and Rehabilitation for the American Legion in their national headquarters in Washington.
Correct.
Close enough?
Yes.
For government work, as we used to say. So the reason I asked you to be on the program, I want to put a shout out to the American Legion, because I was trying to get some help yesterday in talking with somebody not only about benefits but also about what this shutdown that the government is going through right now and how it's affecting people. And I had many responses from people at the national headquarters of the American Legion who eventually ended up putting me in touch with Lori, and I want to put a shout out there to the American Legion for their help, especially for what they do for veterans. So I want to thank you.
Well, thank you.
Okay, so you're right there in the middle of this whole thing. What's happening? How is this all affecting veterans and their benefits and their services that are available to them?
Well, the American Legion, we have, our entire headquarters staff is right in the middle of this shutdown. And I think that what is really amazing is that we're talking about veterans who have disabilities whose pay is being withheld or will be withheld during this after the shutdown on the 21st if this doesn't stop. And so during Secretary Shinseki's testimony, he mentioned that there were 100,000 100% service-connected veterans receiving benefits.
Right.
Of veterans whose only income is that money.
Right, and we should put out that it's not a great deal of money. If you're 100% disabled, I think you get around $3,000 a month.
Correct.
Somewhere in that neighborhood. So for
Correct.
All of us, everybody listening out there, on November 1st, if this thing is not settled, there's no money going into the bank.
Correct.
Ooh.
If it's settled by the 21st, what we were told is that the checks will be late, like by 3 to 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
If there's not a settlement by the 27th, there will absolutely be, or the 25th, there will be absolutely no checks that will be delivered.
Wow. All right. Just a quick message to our audience out there. Get on the phone, get on Twitter, get on Facebook, get on email, whatever it is. Contact your congressman and say, hey, guys, do your job, please. not just for the veterans out there. There are many other, obviously, worthwhile government programs that are going to be affected by this just as much.
Right.
So,
and all the veterans who, all of our disabled veterans, whether they're receiving 30%, 40%, no matter what that percentage is, this is somebody who has a disability.
Mm-hmm.
And they need that money, and their families are depending on that money as well. For their, while health care is open, VA health care is there to support those wounded, ill, and injured veterans.
Mm-hmm.
They still need to pay their rent, their car payments. They need to take care of their bills, and that's what is, so frightening, is the stress that this shutdown is putting on veterans right now. With that pending, that cloud over them, what am I going to do?
Right, and we, we just got through talking with David about it, and some of the men and women in his book were talking about that they had filed a claim, and it had taken a long time, and in many cases it hadn't even been approved yet. And, they're living day to day. I mean, granted, they're going to get the money back retroactively, but, what do you do in the meantime? And
right.
if you're even, as you mentioned, even getting a check for a 20%, 30% disability, that is your car payment or your rent, depending on where you are in the country. And, oh, man. You mentioned that, though, the one good thing, I guess, is that the VA is open for business. The health centers are all out there, and there haven't been any furloughs or anything with the medical staff, has there?
Right. The medical staff, one thing I want to point out, too, is the vet centers are open and available, and so are the VA hospitals and clinics. And they have also offered, many of them have offered space to our department service officers to go in, because the VA regional offices where the claim site is being done, those buildings are all closed. during the shutdown.
So
our service officers can go in and work, but they can't see veterans.
So right now,
so the vet centers and hospitals are allowing those service officers to go in and are offering space, but they don't have computer access. They'll be able to take information longhand on forms, mm-hmm. Unless they carry a printer with them, but they have no computer access to VA programs.
I'm sorry, I'm dumbfounded right now by that. We're talking with Lori Perchio with the American Legion, is the Director of Claims for Veterans and Rehabilitation. If you've got a question for Lori, you know, that you need to get answered, you know, give us a call here, 877-573-7825. I'm really flabbergasted by that, because right now the claims system, which was not running as effectively probably as it could have anyway, is in essence shut down.
Yes.
As far as filing a claim. So if I go in there on Monday to file a claim because of whatever happened to me, it's not even going to be sent in.
Well, that all depends. Well,
okay.
There's no customer service. So if you're not working with the service officer, there's no customer service at the VA where there normally would be. So working with the service officer, and I want to put this out there, that the American Legion website at legion.org, we have a claims coach app. It can be downloaded either through the iPhone app store or through Google for Droid. And our Legion website also offers availability for people to download the app onto their computer. And a portion of that app will allow people to find a service officer near them. So we have department service officers that are typically located within each regional office, but there are service officers who either work for state or counties that are available to help veterans that are not co-located in a regional building, VA regional office.
Okay,
we want to let people know that if they go to a service officer, that service officer can take the claim, tell them what they need. The Claims Coach app also has a checklist, but they can find everything that they need, work with the service officer. The service officer can send that claim into the regional office. There are people available who are supposed to date stamp that as received, but no mail is coming back out. So the claim will go in, and the date will be protected.
Okay.
If they're working through a service officer and know that process.
Right. That's important for those of you that haven't filed claims or have filed claims, is that date that you receive it is when you become eligible to receive benefits if you are approved. Correct?
Right. The payment will begin the first of the month following that date. But you're right. That is the date that the VA will say is the date of claim, is when that date stamp goes in there.
Okay. So, yeah. Because sometimes it takes a little while for the claim to be approved, if ever, in some cases. And so they would go back. Let's say you were finally approved next October. Then you would get retroactive back to October 12th today.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
I was getting myself all confused there.
Yeah, and the American Legion has approximately 2,900 accredited service officers across the United States. So if somebody is looking for assistance, go to our website and look up a service officer, go to that claims coach, give us a call at our national headquarters, and we'll be able to find a service officer local to you, or fairly close to you, you know, across the United States. So we want to let people know that there is assistance out there. And we're trying to ensure that veterans know every step they need to file that claim.
Mm-hmm. And I want to remind our audience, too, that the great job that the American Legion is doing, but the VFW, the Vietnam Veterans, the AMVETS, most states and counties have veteran service officers that can help you with a claim and at least get it started and, you know, show you the steps that you need to go through. So I want to make sure that there's no reason not to do that. But you mentioned that and also that the care is still available at the VA health centers themselves.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want people to think that they can't go in and get taken care of.
Right.
In your experience with this new generation of veterans that are coming back, and which we talked about with David, I guess the injury of this particular war, is it the traumatic brain injury and PTSD, or what are you finding?
It's more PTSD. been an NTBI, but we're hearing more on the claims side, you know, where the diagnosis is more, the TBI will be mild, and the PTSD has a varied range on it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I want to really point out is that a veteran suffering from PTSD, and there's all this controversy surrounding, do I tell anybody? Should I keep quiet? How will this impact my employment in the future? There are so many reasons that we're hearing why people don't want to admit that they have PTSD or seek treatment mm-hmm. for it. And the vet centers will provide treatment. And a person who receives treatment for PTSD due to the military doesn't have to file a claim.
Right. Yeah, I want to remind
you. Get in there and get that treatment is the most important thing. And like when listening to David and the families that are affected, people just need to be very realistic and say, you know what, I know there's something wrong. Go in and please get treatment and take care of your family by doing that, yourself and the family. And mm-hmm. it's a really tough road. Admitting that there's something wrong is being able to talk to a complete stranger and open up and say, this is what I'm feeling.
That's tough
for a lot of people.
Yeah, that is tough to do, because I can remember when I came back and I was told that I needed to talk to someone, and I went mm-hmm. and the first person I talked to was much younger than I am, which is not their fault. And I just said, well, I can't relate to this person, you know, at all.
Yeah.
And I stopped for a long time. And eventually went back and found the person that, you know, that I needed to talk to. And the families are also have the ability to participate. Does the VA help out the families themselves?
No.
No?
Not unless, and there may be, some treatment centers may offer group
mm-hmm.
Counseling. The vet center may offer counseling to family members, but it may depend on VA healthcare facility, but mm-hmm. typically they don't group counseling unless the doctor brings that in or it's suggested by the doctor. But that's more I believe that's more prevalent within the vet center. And I could be mm-hmm. wrong, but I don't hear a lot about family counseling.
Well, I'm sure that we'll hear about it. We remind our audience there, if you know of these services that are available out there, just, you know, let us know here at Veterans Radio. You can email me at dale@veteransradio.net or Bob, or like I said before, we're on Twitter and we're on Facebook, and you can just send us a message and we'll get the word out that this is available to you. I know that there are organizations that are out there that are offering some of these services, like Military Spouses is one that I'm aware of. And but it's so important that everybody gets help. And so the message that I'm getting from Lori is that if Congress doesn't do anything by the 21st, your check may be a little late. If it's by the 25th or later, we won't see a check until for a while.
Until it ends.
So, again, I encourage everybody.
There may be another backlog we're not sure how long it's going to take them to get back up and running.
Oh, that's true, because they'd finally gotten some of the numbers starting to come down of the claims that were filed.
The checks are one thing, right, and then the backlog, any progress that the VA made on the backlog, the claims backlog, they've lost that ground. And it's unfortunate, but we'll keep working and doing everything that we can. And as well as other service organizations, we're all, you know, making sure that if we have a way to help with the VA, they're reaching out. The VA is reaching out to service organizations and saying, you know, what can we do? But unfortunately, as much as the VA has been in front of congressional committees, you know, and why haven't you done this and why haven't you done mm-hmm. that? And then this happens to the VA when they were just starting to get momentum.
They're pulling the rug out from under you, and unfortunately the rug is being pulled out under me today. Lori Perchio from the American Legion, thank you so very much for being on Veterans Radio. We'll be in touch. And for our audience, make sure that you stay tuned to Veterans Radio. Next week we will be back. Bob Gould will be your host. And until then, you are dismissed.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily of Veterans Radio or the station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio, LLC.